From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, May 11th, 2010. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, we turn our attention to branding in the geospatial world. In particular, we look at how number one and number two and perhaps number three position themselves in several categories of geospatial offerings. How are the number twos doing from a branding perspective? We'll have a look after a word from our sponsor.
Manage your field data and immediately share critical business information across your enterprise. For more information, visit www.esri.com/mobile solutions.
Now, I was reviewing over the weekend some of my old marketing and positioning books, in particular those from Rees and Trout, which I know, Joe, you also have on your bookshelf.
Many of them, yes.
And I was reviewing some of the content, and one of the arguments that they make is that if you want to position a product for your prospective customer, you have a limited number of ways of doing that. And in a blog post I found on Reese's son's blog, he reviewed six possibilities. I'm not going to go through all of them. And these are things people are probably pretty familiar with. One way is you just define a completely new category, and then you can be number one in it. And the example that's often cited is Zima, which is a clear alcoholic beverage. And they defined this new category called clear alcoholic beverages. Now, whether anybody cared or not, I don't know, but that is a way to be number one in a category. And I was thinking about, has anybody done that in geospatial? And I came up with one idea, and that was Bentley. And Bentley created a new category of software called geoengineering. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And they were going to be number one in it. Now, another way to brand yourself is to really specialize in one sort of niche of a larger space. And the example, a common example, is Starbucks. Well, yes, Starbucks sells coffee, right? But they sell fancy schmancy coffee, and they sell it in this environment that's very special. And needless to say, they've done very well and distinguished themselves from many others. An example of specialization, I think, in geospatial is to look at somebody who took a very small box and then specialized, you know, with a pinpoint focus on it. And the company that I would put in that space is Safe Software. They do something called ETL.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much don't do anything else, and they stay in their little box, and they are the specialists. No question about it. So what I want to look at today is one other way to distinguish yourself, and that's when there is already a leader in the category and you are number two or you plan to be number two, how do you position yourself? And let me quote from the blog I was reading about the number two brand. Consumers like choice. Sometimes you can build a powerful brand just by giving consumers an alternative to the leading brand. But what strategy can best deliver the number two position? Quote, maybe if we can produce a better product than the leader, unquote, goes the thinking, quote, we won't necessarily overtake them, but we will wind up in the number two position, unquote. This is the worst possible approach. Why is this so? Because the leader in your field already has the perception of producing the better product. Then how do you become a strong number two brand? You become the opposite of the leader. Coke was for older people, so Pepsi became the cola for younger people. Listerine was the bad-tasting mouthwash that killed germs and odor in your mouth. So Scope became the good-tasting mouthwash and a strong number two brand. Home Depot is a leading home improvement store, but its crowded aisles and jammed shelves appeal more to men than women. So Lowe's became the home improvement store for women with clean layouts and wide aisles. So that's a really nice description of how to make sure number one and number two don't seem to be the same thing, but in fact are distinct. Now, what I want to do for today's podcast, then, is to walk down some categories in geospatial and try to assess how number two is doing in terms of positioning itself with regard to number one. Now, when I say number two here, I'm not looking at some official rankings that somebody has put together, but the perception in my brain of who's number one and who's number two, whether or not they really are, is immaterial, because this is all about what's going on in your head. So let's start off with the classic first one, which is going to be, we would have said GIS software, but now maybe we need to say desktop GIS software, just to distinguish it from those things that are starting to appear in the cloud and other places. Probably people would agree that the order number one and number two is something like ESRI and then Intergraph, or maybe ESRI and then Bentley, or something like that. Is that fair, Joe?
Yeah, it's a fair distinction today, I think. Yeah.
Right, and it may be changing and already has changed perhaps in the past couple of years.
Right.
So I was thinking about, okay, so how do those two companies distinguish themselves from a branding perspective? And I have to say, I have no idea, especially since Intergraph has gone private. I have no idea how they are positioning themselves distinctly from ESRI.
To me, it's almost the effect of what they're not doing as opposed to what they are doing. I think ESRI correctly positioned themselves as the GIS company, and everybody was not the GIS company. And even though the other companies tried to compete in that category, somehow or another, they got repositioned to being something else. Even though they say they compete in this market, whether by default or on purpose, they've had to take a wildly different approach because they could not compete with ESRI in the GIS category.
So what's Intergraph's wildly different approach?
I think what they tried to do was circumvent just the moniker, the acronym GIS, to say that we will be more of an enterprise integration company. I think today, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to be more of an integrator, even though their product, GeoMedia, still competes in the GIS category. So I think what they are trying to move to is being a small systems integrator as opposed to being a product company. And I think that may be the appropriate positioning strategy for them, because they're never going to compete. But that's only because it evolved to that point. I think they wanted to compete in that category, but they could not. What I think they should have done, and I think what they tried to do but not successfully, is maybe compete in a market like GIS software for DOTs, for example, because ESRI was so dominant in the state and local area. I'm not sure any of those strategies ever panned out, but I think it had to do more with a lack of direction, lack of focus, than it did from anything they did overtly. Yeah, I think another interesting thing is to say, well, what's happening to Autodesk? Because you could have pointed to a big three or four a couple of years ago with ESRI, Intergraph, Autodesk, and Bentley. And my perception of Autodesk, for example, is that they've almost abandoned GIS. So the positioning, the position in my mind of what's happening to Autodesk is not very favorable in the GIS category.
I would tend to agree with you. There's no effort to even have a peace of mind share in geospatial.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to something sort of newer and shinier. And I'm not even sure what the name of the category is, which is an interesting statement in itself. But I would call it the sort of game-like location-based social services. You may not know what that means, but I would pick the top two right now as Foursquare and Gowalla. And how are they distinguished? Wow, the only thing I can say is I know in Foursquare you can become the mayor of something, and that may allow you to get certain privileges, but I have no clue as to what Gowalla is doing to separate itself or distinguish itself from Foursquare.
I think that's true, and I think the category here is LBS gaming, because I think there have been tries at gaming in the past, but these two seem to have emerged at the top. Who's number one or number two, I think, may be more based on location, believe it or not. And I remember this conversation I had with Brady Forrest. He was saying, I believe that Gowalla had more of a kind of a presence in, I think he said New York City, for some reason or another, and Foursquare was kind of reaping the benefits down in the Southwest, like in Austin. So how that happened, I don't know. Because as a location-based game, you want to be everywhere, not in a particular city. But maybe that is as a result of more people using it and then more people inputting the true location of places into each of their respective databases. So I'm not sure that this category has really panned out or matured to that point yet where we can point to a one or a two. But it certainly is a category that's growing. You're right. There's very little distinction between either of those.
Right. And actually, the number one, maybe if you look at number of participants, this just came out last week, Google Latitude has 3 million users. And yet, it doesn't even register on the radar. Although perhaps it will soon, because it's going to have a check-in. And rumor on the street is that Facebook will soon have a check-in as well. So that may revamp that entire category and hopefully distinguish those offerings. Let me try one more before I pass the torch on to you and we can talk about some of your categories of interest. Let's talk about worldwide data, geospatial data sets. I think it's pretty easy to say there's two big players. They're TeleAtlas and Navtech, owned respectively by TomTom and Nokia. Boy, if you ask me to pick one as number one and one as number two, boy, you know, I don't know. And I say that as somebody who watches the industry and from how they position themselves one against the other, which is, and they certainly haven't recently because they've been acquired by larger companies, but boy, that's a big fuzzy mess right there.
Well, it is, and I guess to some degree I almost have to recuse myself because I know the companies fairly well, and the perception that's growing in my mind, well, Navtech was acquired by a larger company, Nokia, maybe that gives it more credibility. TeleAtlas by truly a sat-nav company in TomTom, not as wide a worldwide scope, if you will. And so in my mind, I'm getting this feeling like, well, Navtech's the leader. They've got probably better positioning in the auto market. Their stuff is embedded in some of the big German brands. So my thinking has been certainly influenced by what has happened in the recent 2 years since their acquisition. So again, in my mind, Navtech goes to the top. TeleAtlas falls back, maybe even because some of the financial problems that TomTom has had. So that's where it's ending up in my mind.
And it's interesting you say that, because your whole discussion there had almost nothing to do with the actual branding of those particular brands, but really about the nature of the acquiring companies.
And it had nothing to do with the accuracy of the data.
Or the quality in any way, right.
Right. And that's one of the things that Riesentrout often talks about is, you know, if you want to try to compete as being the better product, well, that's not the right strategy. It's establishing that position in the mind as opposed to saying, I've got to have the better product. And actually, just going back to our first category, that's really what Intergraph tried to do for so long, was create the better mousetrap in GIS, a failed strategy all the way around because the positioning had already taken place that ESRI was GIS.
If Navtech is not taking the anti-approach, you know, be the opposite, which is what we discussed at the outset, and TeleAtlas is certainly not taking we're the opposite of Navtech. What I want to stick in here is maybe it's not number three, but it's certainly the anti-TeleAtlas and the anti-Navtech, and that's OpenStreetMap.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is fundamentally the opposite. And that makes for a very interesting situation in this category. And one of the true, actual, opposite situations here. So OpenStreetMap is doing it right and they didn't brand themselves that way. That's just the nature of the product, I would argue.
Yeah, and opposite in so many ways. Opposite in licensing, opposite in pricing, opposite
in data collection.
Right, right.
Yes, everything is different.
And in this category, if you want to compete, and you want to compete strongly, I think the idea here is you want to have the worldwide global navigable database all over the world, right? You want to have the strongest product. And I haven't seen any of these guys try to do that. Now, I want to have the database in China, the database in Sicily, for example. You know, you want to have the best all over the world. I haven't seen anybody take that approach yet.
Well, that's a huge thing to try to stamp on your box, or your virtual box in this case.
But the first thing is create the perception. Then
right.
Go ahead.
None of them, and I want to be clear that you're suggesting none of them have even tried to position themselves that way, even though they're not there yet.
Correct. So right. Get that position in the mind first, then go do it.
And actually, I if anybody is doing a better job of that, I would suggest it's OpenStreetMap, if only because every time there's a crisis somewhere, they're jumping right on it and getting in and getting that. If it's not done, we're getting it done right now.
Yeah.
And that's... That changes perceptions, especially in this informal branding that they do, which is mostly word of mouth and social media and so forth. There's no formal, you know, marketing campaign for OpenStreetMap. Okay, right. let me turn it over to you and have you pick some categories that we can take a look at.
One of the interesting consumer categories I think we could explore is weather. One of the big location applications around. Everybody knows weather. I've often commented that we never would have thought that there would be a weather channel that we would be so enamored with that every morning we'd have to go to the weather channel to find out our weather. Now, coming back down to the a net-based solution, you've got a few. I think you've got weather.com, you've got WeatherBug, and you've got AccuWeather as kind of the three top that I would say. And in my mind, and it's kind of just an interesting scenario, when I want to find weather, I go to weather.com, and yet on my mobile smartphone, I've got WeatherBug, which I think has a wonderful interface and very easy setup. I don't use AccuWeather, but I like the name because it positions in my mind that you're going to get the most accurate positioning of the weather. You're going to get the most detailed maps. And actually, if you go to the website, you do get that impression. But to me, it's fallen to the number three position because I haven't seen it establish itself in either, again, either on a handset or on the web. I don't know if you have a particular choice. But those would be how I kind of fall out. Weather.com on the web, WeatherBug on my mobile smartphone.
That's an interesting category, too, because that's something that everybody sort of needs, whether you're getting that information from TV or radio or your device. And I am just not as excited as most people are about weather. I'm not that picky about weather. I've always used AccuWeather. Why? Because the folks who started it are from Penn State. And that's been just fine for me. And until I get, and I think you make a really good point, and that's that the product that you pick may not be the same one on your desktop or your laptop as on your handheld. And boy, if the folks are working, and providing those applications for the mobile devices, you want to have people be loyal on all of their platforms.
And yet, you could say that the platform is the category, right? If your platform is a smartphone, you sure do want to be number one on one of those, either it's the web or the smartphone or mobile device. I'm not even sure that has clicked in the mind of any of these players, but hopefully it has. The other category we should talk about is what I would call generic local finders. The three that I came up with here are Where by the U-Locate folks, Point, that would be POYNT, and Yelp. I think Yelp has kind of a name brand recognition, but to me, I would put Where at the top because I found it on my smartphone in the App Store of BlackBerry, and I downloaded it. Now, also, here's another bias because I know the people at Where and have known them for a long time. But I think because I found it for the BlackBerry, I immediately downloaded it and started using it, and it again came to top of mind for me.
And Where's an interesting one because Where is actually a platform, right? And you actually pick specific apps for that platform?
The one that you download to the smartphone is comes with a few basic apps.
Well, how do you think these... And this is an interesting problem. If you are trying to brand a consumer product, you've got to have widespread distribution. You've got to make sure everybody hears that Pepsi is for young people and Coke is for old people, that sort of message. But now that we are so fractured across all of these platforms, it's very hard to get the word out.
And I think the only way that it's being done is virally. I don't know any other way that people could do it. We've heard of these names, but I don't know how they're marketing themselves. It can only be some sort of a viral approach at this point, and that's a risky proposition.
Right, so the people who are the BlackBerry people will talk among themselves and share the BlackBerry apps of choice, and the iPhone people will share the iPhone apps of choice, and the Android people will share their apps of choice.
Well, and of course, what is being done, at least my familiarity with the with the BlackBerry App World Store, is that you can review, give your own rating for each of the individual apps that you try, and therefore that's how it gets spread virally.
That's what goes on in the App Store as well, and iTunes for that matter.
Yeah, I would think so too. But in my mind, what I'm doing is I'm always looking at the reviews for each of these apps before I even think about downloading them.
So branding is maybe less important as we move into this more fractious space?
That's a hard call to make.
So we just if something on the BlackBerry app world had a number one rating and you'd never heard of the folks behind it, you would be inclined to download it just because it got great reviews?
I think that's part of it, yeah. I think I would look to the reviews.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how branding is going to change across all these new devices, especially with all these new development environments, and then all the third-party developers that are jumping on to provide the apps for these various and sundry stores. And I think the same thing is going to happen in the cloud, frankly, because we're getting all these new players, and they're going to have to distinguish themselves. And maybe it's some of this traditional branding coming from ReasonTrout, and some of it's, as you pointed out, more of a viral community shared branding.
Well, that's a good, really good topic, because the cloud is so generic at this point, and in the geospatial arena, you already see some folks trying to establish the cloud position. We have one company called GIS Cloud. Certainly, we are trying to do the same with our GeoCloud event. This is one positioning that's going to, the people are going to put their stakes in the ground really, really soon, and we'll see what happens.
They're not going to be putting their stakes in the ground. They're going to be putting their stakes in their clouds.
Absolutely.
That's all the time we have. Before we go, our sponsor ESRI would like you to know that the 2010 ESRI Homeland Security GIS Summit will be held July 10th through the 13th in San Diego, California, in conjunction with the ESRI International User Conference. At the world's only GIS conference for homeland security, you'll explore how the geographic approach provides a framework for intelligence-led, mission-critical decision-making. For more information or to register to attend, visit www.esri.com/hssummit. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a comment at Directions Magazine or All Points Blog.
And I'd like to remind everybody about our GeoCloud event, which I just mentioned. We do have an open call for papers. However, our exhibitor sponsorships are sold out. So we hope it'll be a great event, and we hope you will join us September 22nd in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.